We naturally run into a supply shortage, which will make it harder for corporate buyers towards the end of the decade when they really need more and more carbon removal credits to deliver their on their net zero targets to fulfill them, right? So it's really a kind of a homemade problem of the market that like a lack of consistent buy-side power and growth that naturally leads to shortages on the supply side, which is then accentuated and made more severe by diminished public support.
Carbonsations, today's carbon industry leaders.
Are you passionate about climate action and staying on top of the latest trends in the world of carbon capture, removal, and markets? Then the Carbon Herald has you covered. Every week, we bring you the top news, breakthroughs, and insights from the world of carbon management, delivered straight to your inbox. No fluff, no jargon, just the essential info you need to stay informed. So whether you're a climate professional or just someone who cares, make sure you're subscribed. Visit carbonherald.com and sign up today for our weekly newsletter. Welcome to the Carbon Stations podcast, where we speak to some of the leading figures in the emerging carbon industry. Our guest today is Hannes Jünginger, CEO and co-founder of one of the world's top providers of carbon removal credits, Carbon Future. This episode is very special because Hannes was the first guest Carbon Stations ever had back when the podcast debuted exactly 2 years ago now. So Hannes, I'm really honored to have you back. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. So yeah, 2 years. Carbon Future has had so many landmark developments in this time. One of the most recent being your partnership with Residual for 500,000 tons of carbon removal. I was wondering if you could briefly walk us through your progress in this time.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I would say looking back into the last 2 years, we have seen a couple of landmark deals and large projects, which really are very different to the early days of our support of durable carbon removals, which started in Central Europe and in California with some very specific biochar-based carbon removal projects. And now in the global south, we see really industrialized solutions with access to large-scale biomass supply, residual biomass from invasive species or from agriculture, or from sustainable timber production. So that is a fundamental shift in the industry. We do not only see with this project, but overall and also on the buyer side, looking at larger scale deals and working towards scaling industry. That is a fundamental shift we see in the market over the last 2 years, I would say.
So one of the things that I believe that was released after the first podcast episode went live was your digital MRV system. So it wasn't something we got to discuss back then, but I think it's safe to say that MRV is at the core of what you guys do. So could you walk us through how Carbon Future approaches MRV and why it's so important for the industry?
That's honestly an interesting question because like when you look at the perception what MRV is and should be in the industry, it's a pretty diverse view we are having here. MRV stands, as we all know, for monitoring, reporting, and verification. And even in the first word and first letter, we sometimes see a diversification between monitoring and measurement. So quite a opaque acronym here. We believe is the key aspect is the access to the data, to the measurement data about carbon removal activities and the contractual data. So documenting the amounts of carbon that have been sequestered and who did it, with which activity, where it was done, and under which protocols. That's from our perspective the core element here. And you could say it's a mixture between monitoring and reporting, like a focus on monitoring, gathering the data and reporting on the data, and then providing that data to an independent verifier, which is the V in the MRV. That is, I think, the core building block to creating a carbon removal credit, which then can be transacted safely and with trust in the future, in financial markets and today in the voluntary carbon market. So I would say, summarizing it, the key element is access to quantification data and to contractual data. That's how we approach MRV, and maybe to make it a bit to separate it from other solutions who are more on the measuring side of things, like very specific measurement solutions, for example, measuring degradation rates or in soil, or weathering rates of rock powder in soil. That's more on the monitoring side, and we would partner here with other providers.
Excellent. Now, last time we spoke, you left me with a lasting impression by saying that biochar would be the biggest CDR solution. And we've in fact seen biochar grow and completely dominate the market today. Do you see it staying in the lead? And if not, what other approaches do you think are emerging as strong contenders in terms of scale?
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't recall my predictions from 2 years ago, but I still...
We have it all documented.
So I was right back then, at least looking 2 years into the future. I mean, maybe if I challenge myself and look 2 years more into the future, I would say biomass-based solutions will continue to dominate in terms of scale and availability, just because they're already at a certain maturity level, right? In biochar powder removal, like certain specific technologies are really, really mature and ready to scale further. And then, of course, BECCS, bioenergy carbon capture and storage projects, and that the whole range here could grow to massive scale very, very quickly. So I would say they will continue to lead. Also, when you look at cost structures, I believe that, especially in the global south, residual biomass availability is abundant still and has to be addressed. And so I think that will continue to lead, yes. Runner-up, BECCS, yeah, other biomass-based solutions. And then looking further into the future, I mean, innovation is absolutely key. And more open system solutions that can leverage what nature provides us in terms of CO2 to carbon transformation with photosynthesis, and then e.g. ocean gas solutions, or of course enhanced rock weathering, that can be solutions that are really can be deployed cost effectively. And I should also mention direct air capture. Hopes are big, challenges as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask about engineered solutions, mainly direct air capture. Like, where you see that going in the years ahead?
Yeah, I mean, we have seen headwinds, especially in the US, where we had probably vanishing tailwinds from with the administration change and the abandoning of many important elements of the Inflation Reduction Act. So tough times for direct air capture, but still, I mean, we are innovating. We are seeing great innovation. We are still seeing great firms, and so I think it continues to be a key technology. But I would not say that, like, in terms of like the next few years, direct air capture will have a chance to come at the same scale as, for example, BECCS or other biomass-based solutions. That's pretty obvious, I would say.
So specific solutions aside, we've seen corporate demand for carbon removal growing, but also a lot of volatility in the market. What other trends are standing out to you? What are buyers really looking for right now?
Yeah, you see me hesitating. I mean, a couple of interesting developments, right? So we see a buyer concentration continuing to be the case, led by, so large-scale durable CDR purchases are led by Microsoft and some other tech players. We see an engagement from financial industry players as well. And we see also some of the leading companies in the heavy emitting sectors, for example, in the aviation space, also taking positions and taking strategic positions and going into the market and help build up the market. So it is Interestingly, when I look at our pipelines and our transactions, a steady growth and also more or less stable growth. So that's almost a positive surprise to me, given the geopolitical developments. However, this is still a super tiny niche. So a broad adoption has not taken place. And I'm more than ever convinced that the broad adoption will only be driven by regulation, led by Europe.
Yeah, we'll circle back to regulation later on in this conversation for sure. But for the moment, how would you describe the state of trust really in the market at this stage?
Honestly, I see still a conviction that this is I'm looking at durable carbon removal solutions and I still see a conviction of the participants in the market that this is a segment of the voluntary carbon market which is dominated by innovation and a willingness to provide the highest possible level of integrity, of quality, and while being cost sensitive and conscious about prices, a willingness to pay whatever it costs in terms of providing the best possible credits and the highest level of trust, right? So people who buy an innovative carbon removal credit, they are also willing to pay for a proper MRV, a proper certification process and stuff like that. So I have not seen like cutting corners too much in this niche of the market.
Yeah, and because a lot of the conversation focuses kind of on corporate buyers, what about the public? How important is broader public trust and understanding of carbon removal, do you believe? And what role do companies like Carbon Future play in building that trust?
I think we have a key role to play here, but it's still very much focused on leading the market together with other innovative leaders. And we are not yet ready for a really broad adoption. Although I think with the capability of firms like Carbon Future and other players, of course, the big tech names come to mind, but also financial market intermediaries like the Swiss Exchange, who has invested in Carbon Future, for example, or some of the bigger banks who are engaging. They are key multipliers, and with their know-how and their brands and their network and their reach, they can add a level of institutionalized trust that makes carbon removal and this future asset class then more accessible to the broader public, to the broader market and investors who are not super specialized, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think that it's based on multipliers to engage with the broader public.
Yeah. So what about the supply side? How has the situation changed there? Many are very worried about an impending shortage of high quality credits. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that is already visible, honestly. So with the growing volumes we are seeing on some of the purchases and some of the projects, which is absolutely needed. I mean, we're still tiny and far away from climate relevance, which is the ultimate goal. I think growth is not just exponential. It also goes in steps. And we have seen a step in professionalization and certain level of early industrialization and some industrial size projects, right, like the one you mentioned or Exomat, which we transacted with Microsoft recently out of Bolivia, and Australian project and some others. I think this level of scale we reached now requires a certain liquidity and financing from the buy side, which is too volatile and uncertain at the moment to really support the large scale investments that are needed to continue to scale up the supply. So we naturally run into a supply shortage, which will make it harder for corporate buyers towards the end of the decade when they really need more and more carbon removal credits to deliver on their net zero targets to fulfill them, right? So it's really a kind of a homemade problem of the market, that like a lack of consistent buy side power and growth that naturally leads to shortages on the supply side, which is then accentuated and made more severe by diminished public support.
So how do we fix that, essentially? How do we get the carbon market to, you know, to scale to the level of actually, you know, reaching that necessary climate impact? How do we fix supply and demand? How do we get it to work as it should?
If I would be a great communicator, I would have a three-step solution, right?
All right.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of elements. It's fixing trust and the supply side is really about, it's really about transparency, about the highest level of quality, about continue to be super honest and help be as open and supportive to the public as possible with the data and the certification standardization on the supply side. That is supported a lot by the European Union regulation for the supply side that is currently in the final stages. So we have a standardization and clarity what it means to create a carbon removal. That's one step, right? Really trusting the supply side. Next step is, of course, continuing to educate buyers and bring leading corporate buyers to the market to do the first step in scaling from a buy side perspective. We are working on that a lot with our markets team, with our communications teams, and with that we can provide a certain kind of exemplary level of growth, which is far away yet from climate relevance. But with that, we can really lead by example and give policymakers a good reference, which models can work and how the buy side regulation should unfold, and then with a good policy in place, and then we can continue to scale the market and also bring financial market ready solutions, to investors and buyers. But that requires really the engagement of regulation, or at least anticipating how the regulation unfolds. And that's, by the way, what financial markets intermediaries already do, like the Swiss Exchange together with us, right? That's why they invest, because they already see this coming and regulation is starting to shape. So I think here we also see positive signals.
I'm glad you mentioned regulation. I did say that we're going to get back to this. I'm curious, from like your perspective, being in the fully immersed in the market, how do you see it right now? Like, not where it's going, not, you know, how are we going to anticipate this development? Where is it right now? And how much of a hindrance is it actually, more than help, to the carbon removal market?
I don't think it's a hindrance, honestly. I mean, when the buy side regulation is not binding yet, right? So I don't see any concrete requirements to really buy durable CDRs, but we have regulatory signals which trigger action for certain types of players, like next to the tech companies. Very specifically financial market players, which are motivated by the advent of a future asset class, so they can participate here and play a role that is really helping the market already today. And some of the, as said, some of the heavy emitters, I mean, aviation I mentioned with the CORSIA regime, which is not yet fit for purpose to support durable carbon removals, but at least there's some binding rules behind it. But also the shipping industry, which is kind of in the course of becoming regulated in terms of carbon footprint. I think what we currently see is some call it a pre-compliance market. So some leaders preparing for the upcoming regulation. And so in that sense, it's already a different discussion as compared to 2 years ago, right? It's kind of, we really, we have texts, we have draft texts, we have timelines, like in the UK, for example, the inclusion of durable CDR in the UK ETS by 29, the indication of the EU to include durable CDR into the ETS after 2030. So things like that already send signals into the market, which lead to at least tactical engagement of some early movers and strategic engagement of some really, really advanced players, especially in the financial industry. It's of course not sufficient at all, but I think it is. We can really also observe how the global societies start to deal with the necessity that durable carbon removal is needed, and it's an externality we have to start to manage and to price and prepare for how we as societies will pay for it, and some of the institutional players are preparing for that. And this is also, when I look at our company specifically, I think the part of our success in the market that we are perceived of as one of the companies that provide solutions for that, for this future.
Since you mentioned that like the landscape has changed dramatically in just only 2 years, back then it seemed like the US was leading the charge of carbon removal and would be the global leader. Things have changed now. Now everybody's kind of looking to Europe. I see Asia is also becoming very focused on carbon removal. Do you see a region that's like leading the chase right now and that, you know, might emerge as a global leader in carbon removal?
I wanna look a bit towards the supply side, because I'm extremely encouraged to see the global south to take the lead on the supply side. I mentioned before the availability of biomass. And when you look at the question at which cost and at which resource constraints and effects and also societal co-benefits we can deliver carbon removal solutions, then I would say LATAM has really taken the lead in terms of delivering high quality durable carbon removal at scale at a competitive price. That is a very interesting development, I would say, because cost competitiveness starts to become really relevant as compared to like providing the most innovative solutions and the best visions and so on, like when you think about new technologies and so on, which come out of a lab maybe at a university in Europe or in the US. Like really these global south projects on the supply side are very encouraging. And apart from that, on the buy side, I see today still Europe and also US buyers to stay leading. It has not completely changed, right? The US corporate buyers are still there, a bit less vocal, a bit less public because of the way how we talk about carbon removals in the public today.
Yeah. So reeling back toward Carbon Future, we mentioned you guys have some very big milestones, but with milestones, there are always hurdles along the way. And I'm very curious to know what have been some of the toughest struggles that Carbon Future has faced over the past year and how you and your team have worked through them.
That's always, I mean, as a startup founder, you always struggle with some stuff, right? Sometimes it's how you grow the company, like where do you make your next bet, and in which technology do you invest and so on and so forth. I think one of the key discussion points we had internally, we already touched upon in a way, it's like, how do we help the market scale, and which suppliers do we support best with which solutions? And we had a lot of conversations if we should move away from a focus on biomass-based solutions and provide more MRV services for a much broader range of technologies. In our collaboration, for example, with XPRIZE, I don't know if you recall it, we provided MRV services for all the XPRIZE finalists, and we did MVP solutions for all types of removal technologies. And at the same time, we learned that what is scaling today in the market is really the biomass-based solutions. So that was an internal, interesting internal process to learn where to focus most in terms of product development and bringing technologies to the market. That was one thing. And the other thing I would say, which was also from a Carbon Future internal perspective, a key milestone was the decision to start to work with a strategic investor partner with our Series A last year with the Swiss Exchange, SIX AG, which is a pan-European stock exchange, with the vision to support a new asset class with carbon removal and kind of leave the path of a pure venture-financed company and really start to collaborate with established strategic player. That was also a major transformation, I would say, we started to undergo. Although we continue to operate, of course, independently. We only have a minority investment, so that is not changing that, but still the type of like how we approach the investor side of things has changed a bit. It's a key development for me.
Yeah, so that brings me to my final question for this episode. What other exciting new developments does Carbon Future have lined up for the near or maybe even not so near future?
I've not prepared this for this question, but it's... I mean, we continue to be super committed to the highest level of transparency and the highest level of trust we can provide to the market. So you will see our platform portals to evolve and provide more and more data and more insights into how carbon removal is created, how portfolios are composed. We will provide all the necessary data solutions to the market here to do proper risk assessments and choose the best possible projects, the best possible portfolios for our clients. And this is something we are building for since the very beginning, very much back-end oriented, very much on a first principle approach. But I think in the near future, we will see more and more of that also in our public-facing solutions and products and tools. So I'm very excited about providing this not only to our direct buyers, but also to channel partners, to other marketplaces and so on and so forth.
Wonderful. I can't have to be having this conversation again. Maybe not 2 years from now, maybe a year. Let's not wait that long.
Yeah.
Yes. And see.
Maybe check the predictions on which technology is leading the market then.
Absolutely. Hannes, this was, as always, such a great pleasure. I really enjoyed speaking to you today. And thank you so much for making the time to be here.
Wonderful. Thanks, Violet. Looking forward to the next time.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Carbon Stations podcast and would like to hear more conversations like this, please be sure to subscribe. We really appreciate the support.